Hello, folks. How are you? Edith here, which you maybe already knew since you have chosen to listen to Soundtracking with Edith Bowman. That's me. Welcome along. Thank you so much for choosing to listen to the podcast. Welcome along if you're a returning listener, and welcome. Welcome to the party. If you are a first-time listener, it's brilliant to have you along for the ride. There's loads of great stuff at the cinema at the minute, and I know that it feels like things are kind of taking steps back to being more normal, but I totally appreciate that not everybody feels safe with being back in a cinema environment. So if you are, then get along and see some of the brilliant films that are out at the cinema, be that the subject of this week's episode, Sing 2, or something like West Side Story, or maybe you want to watch something at home. You've got two great options that I know of at the minute that are out on DVD. You've got Dune that is out, and Last Night in Soho, the Edgar Wright, both of which you can hear talked about on previous episodes of this podcast. So there's a couple of recommendations, both for at-home viewing or if you fancy getting out and stuffing your face with popcorn at your local cinema. But our latest guest on Soundtracking is a friend of the show, someone that I've known for many, many, many moons, and someone I absolutely love getting to spend time with. And he's returning to discuss his sequel to a massive family favourite in not just ours, but many households around the world. The fabulous Garth Jennings found a winning formula with his joyous animation Sing, and has thankfully managed to recreate it with Sing 2, all with lots of new things. In addition to an all-star cast reprising their roles from the first film, Garth also managed to persuade none other than Bono to play a reclusive rock star and allow him to use some classic U2 songs. Plenty more on that shortly, but we'll begin with another of the many great tunes in the film, Let's Go Crazy, as performed by Tori Kelly, Taron Egerton, Reese Witherspoon and Nick Kroll. Piggy power!
There you are. How you doing?
Happy New Year! Happy.
Can we still say allowed to say that. It's not quite wrong yet, is it?
Yeah, and I always wonder what the cutoff point is.
Well, if it's a friend, if I haven't seen you for ages, yeah, Happy New Year, Edith.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm all right. How's it going? Are you out in the country again?
Yeah, I'm in the sticks. I'm in Gloucestershire. Sun is shining.
Oh, I love that.
Skies are blue. It's brilliant.
I know. It looks idyllic right now.
It's wicked. Yeah, it's awesome. Listen, I'm so glad to have you back on the podcast to talk about Sing 2. I was going through the montage again this morning from the first film, the audition montage. We created our own game at home where you had to sing the next song before you're the first person to sing the next song. So we kind of knew it that well.
It's weird though, isn't it? How we get used to like songs in sequence, like on albums.
Yeah.
If you normally know, oh, that one comes next. And it's weird when you hear it on the radio and that song doesn't come next.
But it was such a fun game. And so we're all trying to get to know the new film as well as the first film so that we can nail it with that medley as well. Some boys are trying too hard. He don't try at all. Though. Younger than my ex's buddy, act like such a man. So I see nothing better. I keep him forever like a vendetta. In the middle of the night, in my I know I'm gonna be with you, so I I guess because thinking about how long these films take to make, you know, it's an incredible feat, you know, in terms of the length and the work and the amount of people involved. And I was just looking down the list under the music team and the number of musicians and additional singers. There's kind of hundreds in there as well. It's a huge collaboration of so many people on these films.
It's massive. And yeah, I mean, the whole team of Sing 2, I think, is just over 500 people.
Whoa.
And we've been on it for, 4.5 years. Isn't that insane? What were we thinking? Why would you do that?
Well, we're very glad you have. We're very glad you were thinking, I'll make another one.
I'll do another one. Let's do it again. I know what we should do as well. Let's make it much harder to make. Yes, let's make it more challenging because it wasn't like the first one was difficult enough. Anyway, yes.
Was the second one greenlit before the first one kind of had the response that it did?
No, it wasn't greenlit, but it had, I remember a year before we finished, we were starting to chat about it, but just informally, like over a cup of coffee, wouldn't it be funny to see where this lot go? You know, because by the end of the first one, they've only just cobbled together a show in the ruins of a theater. Wouldn't it be nice to see if their career actually did take off or not? And then it was like, well, it'd be great if they're like a family now, because I love that when you get a crew. And I love that thing. And wouldn't it be great if they went all the way to the big leagues. And I had a trip to Vegas and saw a few of these Cirque du Soleil shows that, oh, could you imagine if they tried to do this? I'd like to see that. And then that was about a year prior. So conversation started a year before Sing 1 was even released. And then by the time it was released, we were like, okay, we should make that.
Wow.
So it wasn't greenlit. I don't even know when we get greenlit. We just seem to start making it. And somebody along the way goes, oh, you're greenlit. And we're like, oh, good. That
it's like you're on a treadmill, having a nice walk, and then somebody kind of just, you know, notches up your speed and the incline slightly.
Yes. I would say we've been at maximum speed and incline for 3.5 years like this. It's been like, because you think of animation as being really slow. Everyone says, oh, it's so slow. It takes forever. Mm. It's like, yeah, it's slow, but I can't breathe. We're going so fast. Like, it's so intense for that period of time. Definitely had a couple of meltdowns along the way. So this, you're seeing me at a much better place right now.
I love it. For people who are just listening to this, I'm assuming you're in Paris and this is your office where you do some of the scratch stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Where you test all some bits of the dialogue and
the
all that
dialogue
kind of
and stuff. Yeah, I just stand at this microphone. I do Miss Crawley from here as well. So it's just, it's exactly the same thing. Yeah.
With music, it's got to be one of the very first things that you think about, because with these films, it's got so many roles, you know, in terms of obviously the gang are all, it's part of what they love doing. It's what they want to do. But you've got all these kind of other little sections where some of the songs bleed into kind of score in a way. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the lovely medleys and things like that. So it must be, what's that thought process of going, right, tunes, what are we going to have? I mean, how does
right,
it...
Right, tunes, what are we going to do, lads?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's you just put it the perfect way, which is that we're coming at it from all different directions. Mm. Sometimes it's a case of, most of the time it starts in the script, that there is something I'm writing into the script, like, okay, this would be, okay, let's go crazy. And this is how I break it down. And then I would have a bit where it stops and I'd have a bit where this would happen. And like I would have done with music videos, breaking it right down. And then... other times you'll go, okay, this would be, we need something like this, but this isn't quite right yet, but something that ticks this emotional box. And then other times you're finding in the edit, if you're going to like an audition sequence, you've got like a bunch of songs and ideas you like, and you're trying them, you go, that just doesn't go with that one. It doesn't hand off, you know. Mm-hmm. Bangs needs to go into something else, you know. It's very, so there's
Billie
no
Eilish.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I know.
Yeah, nice. You're good test. You passed.
Both my knees for you, don't say thank you, oh please, I your girlfriend mad type. Might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
It's not really scientific, but it's definitely emotionally led. And of course, by the time you get to the end of the film, the thing you have to do is kind of not only make a sort of palette of four or five songs that really feel like a lovely, satisfying ensemble of music, but also mm-hmm. you're serving those character stories, and that music has to sort of have a different role, as music does. Yeah. Like, one is like celebrating love, new love, you know, a crush. One is celebrating kind of like being, you know, fighting and defending yourself and be, you know, and the other one is like, you know, grief, literally handling grief and healing. And so you're trying to show not just a spectrum of music, but a spectrum of what music can mean to people. That yeah. sounds scientific and heavy, but you have to have those layers there. Otherwise it doesn't resonate emotionally.
Well, that's the thing, is like, it really connects on so many levels and for so many generations as well. And I think that that's got a lot to do with it in terms of, you know, for kind of young kids, it's got an instant kind of gratification sonically and, you know, and visually. And, but then for other people, they can resonate in different ways with different depths of what it's saying. That's such the clever thing about it, is that there's so many wonderful themes in this film as well, that I think is what just makes it something that you want to go back to again and again yeah. and again.
I love that. And I loved that the first Sing film had that reaction, that families and kids would sort of play it a lot. I mean, that's so rewarding. But you realize that's quite a responsibility as well. So if you're going to make a sequel, you better do your best job with it, because these songs are going to be playing in houses a lot. But it also gave us confidence to say, well, yeah, we don't have to be picking everything that's popular. You can have 2.5 minutes of Mercury Rev that most people watching this won't have heard of.
Within the first 5 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. I know. I love that. And I love that I've been working with a studio who have no problem with that, because they completely understand that when they're watching it, they feel everything they want to feel. And they're like, yeah, that works.
All the long red lines that take control of all the smoke like streams that flow into your dreams. That big blue open sea.
And it doesn't have to say, yeah, but how many hits has this thing had in the last few years? If you look at that, if you let that guide you, you're going to be in trouble. But so it's always a mix of things, people know, things people don't know.
If only I was allowed to do radio shows that had that ethos, it would be the dream job.
Why don't you, man? Just take over. Get some rich person to give you a ton of money and just set you free. I'm listening. I'm tuning in already.
You set me up with Bono and then we're absolutely sorted.
Yeah, wait, totally. Bono. I know this lady. She's wicked.
Speaking of him, it's really interesting because I remember I interviewed Richard Curtis for the film he did with Danny Boyle yesterday, with the kind of backdrop of the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
And Ed Sheeran has this kind of really slightly weird role within the film. And I said to him, you know, was it always going to be Ed Sheeran? He went, no. He's like, I originally wanted Chris Martin, but he wouldn't do it, sort of thing. I was like, okay, thanks for your honesty.
That's amazing that he was so honest. Nah, I didn't want Ed Sheeran. I didn't know. No. I wanted to start with the top and then work my way down to Ed Sheeran.
But you went to the top and you got straight in there.
Straight in there.
It doesn't really, I don't think it would really, I was trying to think, who else could it be? And it can't really.
There isn't one. I don't have
because
one.
Because of so many layers, because of the songs. You know,
yeah, it's different if it's an actor who's just only providing a voice. You could probably find other alternatives, but it's not just that voice. It's those songs and that legacy and all of that combined. Mm-hmm. There was no plan B. We'd just have to rethink the whole thing. You know, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. There aren't any others still haven't found what I'm looking for. You know, And I couldn't believe it though, you know, because you go all out there, you throw all this, put this package together and we sent it to a manager or agent type person, somebody.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect to hear back. I expected to hear, very nice, he's so busy, he wants to thank you, you know, the nice courtesy decline. But then it was is like suddenly a few days later, somebody said, oh, he's going to phone you in 10 minutes. And I was like, yeah, I don't think he's going to. Rock stars aren't generally punctual. I'm sorry if you're listening, rock stars. You don't tend to be a punctual bunch of people. That's fine. You'd be rock stars. That's okay. I didn't expect him to phone, but he did. He phoned. And we had this lovely, lovely chat about music and film. Just exactly the kind of conversation you and I are having right now. It's no different. It was so easy and enthusiastic. And he loved this idea of like, grief has played a huge part in his life. He lost his mum and he was talking about how that gave him his voice, but how it can take people's voice away. And and so that's, and suddenly we were doing it and good gracious. Yeah. It's now done.
There's an amazing little film up on YouTube that I saw, which you did this great little sort of in studio with Garth Jennings featurette. On your phone, kind of look, it's the Eiffel Tower. And then I love it's so lovely. But you get, it's so great because we get a little insight into you with the actors and how present you are and how, you know, you're not in a booth, you're in that room with them and you're kind of, what about a bit like this? And it seems that the energy that comes off that is like, you look like you're just having the best time.
I do love it. I love it. And I think energy is vital and you've got to sustain it and share it and not overpower anybody, but you've got to kind of bring that. And that's one of the things I love about it. It's one of the things that's also so exhausting about it. I'm almost always very nervous before a recording session, even if it's someone I've worked with many times and I get on really well with, because there's are we going to make it work this time sort of energy. Yeah. And then once you get in the room and you just start going, it's fantastic. And it can be really the most thrilling thing. And you point out that video that you saw, the funny thing was that when lockdown kicked off, all these kids were stuck at home and, you know, children couldn't go to school. And the boss of Illumination was helping out the educational authorities in California by giving them animation, like a little animation tutorial to sort of give them stuff to work on. And so I actually made that video with Chris, with my phone as a part of an educational thing while kids were in lockdown in LA. But it's actually was me describing my process to children. And then at the end of it, they were invited to send in clips and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
But we liked that stuff. We realized, it's quite nice to see how this stuff is made. And normally it's done in a very sort of antiseptic way. You know, it's filmed afterwards and it's all nice lighting and stuff. It's not. It's very scrappy and very tactile and human and energy. So it was good to use that. So we reused it and made more like it because it sort of worked.
Just imagine it. A spectacular musical.
Okay, everybody, lots of energy now.
And action.
Keep it like, so the panic is all very small. Okay, from the top.
No, stop, stop, no.
Hello, my name is Garth Jennings and I'm the writer and director of Sing. And, sorry, my dog wants to say hello. This is Luna. Anyway, I'm going to take you to the office with me right now and show you something I've not shown anyone before, which is how I make the movies.
As you can see, it's in Paris. That's the Eiffel Tower over there, hiding behind that tree. And all the animation is done here.
So this is my office. And this over here is my voice booth. And record what we call scratch. They're just rough voices. They're not the real voices. They'll be done by the proper actors once I've got it working. But first, let's have a go at some scratch.
Now, there's one voice that I was doing for scratch that actually ended up being a real character.
Lapsang Soochong, courtesy of Mr.
And that was Miss Crawley.
Rise and shine, sweetheart!
here at the studio. We record all the voices for the movie and we put them all together with the storyboards and we cut a version of the movie.
Hi, Mr. Moon. I'm not so good in small spaces.
And now we need to record the real actors to bring the characters to life properly.
Mr. Moon, I'm not so good in small spaces.
Okay.
Somebody stick on my daughter.
Sorry. Come on, let's get you out of here.
Aha! Mina, do you think that's kind of your size?
Now, all our actors are super talented.
I am going to win a ton of awards for this.
My job is to make sure that the actor is clear on what they're doing and they feel comfortable to just try different things out. That's actually quite funny. We could use that for Buster. So we did. We put it in the movie.
Hey, this guy doesn't have it figured out, so we can't start work right now.
I have to be open and read the actor and try and get the best out of them that also serves my film. If you do it right, it can be the most exciting process in the world.
Yeah, I think we pretty much nailed it.
There's nothing holding me back.
So there's some examples of what it's like to direct animation. I'll be finished on Sing 2 very soon, and when it comes out, I really hope you enjoy it.
It's really nice to see the actors and how they are, you know, in terms of they're not just stood in front of a microphone, they're kind of bouncing about and they're really kind of getting into it and to really give the character that authenticity, I guess.
And you're very vulnerable there behind that microphone. As you know, it's just you and there's no other sound. There's no costume, got no props. You can hear your stomach rumbling. You're very exposed. Do you know what I mean? And so anyone can feel very nervous and sort of inhibited behind a microphone, especially if you're trying to get them to go to something. You know, not necessarily bombastic, but, you know, revealing. So the job is to kind of create an atmosphere where that's fine and you can make mistakes and you can get to that place and not worry and not feel too precious.
Yeah.
You know? And when Taron sings at the end of the film and he really has to yell his head off because after he sung the song, there's a kind of epilogue where he just goes above and beyond and there's all this sort of drumming going on. And he was having to really cut loose and go against all of his sort of singing instincts, I suppose. So I was like, don't worry about being in tune. Just fight the guy. You know? And obviously it's perfectly in tune because he's great. But this enthusiasm and energy that he was able to put into it was great. And again, that comes back to your thing about energy and allowing people to go there.
Yeah. It's really funny. We were my kids are slightly obsessed with Daft Punk at the minute, and they've been listening to. They love this particular track with Giorgio Moroder on talking.
Yeah,
and if he talks about when he was people call me Giorgio. And anyway, but as soon as the kids have said that, the thing that they say straight after it in the car is like, Biggie Power, which is like Nick Coy's like that. I wonder if Nick Crow based his
Giorgio Moroder
on Giorgio Moroder.
Call me Giorgio. Well, you know what? If they make a third film, and if Gunter has a brother or an uncle, he should be Giorgio, shouldn't he?
Yeah, totally.
That'd be so great. It's like, this is my cousin Giorgio. Say hello, Giorgio. You know, I'm Giorgio. Yeah, I love that.
so funny. What was Bono like in the voice booth? Because obviously, as well as the, you know, kind of him being the performer, and he's a character, you know, it's a different side to him than we've seen and heard, really.
I wish I had the recordings here. He's one of the only performers I've ever worked with who kind of wanted to audition before he got the part. Not audition as in he just wanted to be sure he could get something we both liked. And I thought that was really smart because he didn't want to do a voice that he didn't believe in. or didn't feel he could follow through. And also he's standing next to the, not literally, but he's, there's Matthew McConaughey, there's Scarlett, there's Reese, there's all these amazing actors. He feels he has to, wanted to make sure he could do the thing. So I went and met with him at his house. We had a couple of hours just running around his living room with my phone. It's on here somewhere. I should have thought of this before I came on. Of him trying voices out, me being the other people, like, oh, come on, be in the show. You know, I was doing the Buster Moon stuff. And he was going, you know, and he went to this like Jack Nicholson place at one point. He was like, no, I'm not going to be in your show. You know, and then he was like, I was like, oh, no, that's too. Oh, I don't know what that is. I don't like that guy. And then we tried other things. And then it just found this very gentle, like, and it was so much about the breathing and like where you take the breaths, which sounds ridiculous, but it really was about like, no, just breathe through every line. Don't project and just let it sit right down there. And even when you're being mean or funny, just sit right down there. And then when you're getting to those vulnerable points, don't be afraid to break. Also his daughter, Eve, I remember there was one session I did remotely and I remember Eve was there and I think she helped as well. I think she was great to give him confidence and sort of just go, Dad. I remember there was one line towards the end where it's kind of a sad line that he's saying. And I heard Eve in the background go, Dad, you're killing me. It was adorable, but it was, And then the funniest thing though, was when I actually then had to get him to sing his own song, you know, I still found what I'm looking for.
It's not how he wants it. It's how you want it, yeah. To facilitate the film.
Yeah. And the thing is, though, there was a problem because his voice, his singing voice is perfect. It hasn't. I'm not saying that to be complimentary. The fact is, he still sounds fantastic. And I have a character who supposedly hasn't sung for 15 years. So I had to say to him, that's a great take. Do you mind singing it a little bit less good, like a bit more... bit more like, so no good. He's like, it sounds too good, doesn't it? I said, yeah, I can't believe I'm saying that to you at your own song. But could you crap it up a bit? Just, you know, just for the first bit. Once you're out, we can let you soar. But yeah, you find yourself in these strange positions making films, saying the oddest things to people and telling Bono to sing his own song a bit less good. It's a very, very strange thing to be doing.
Did he know what songs you wanted to include?
Oh yeah, something? Yeah. No, and okay. He wanted. He at first said, "Oh no, we never give the rights to Where the Streets Have No Name."
Oh wow,
you won't have that. We just as a band won't let that one go. And I was like, totally get it.
Did he say why?
I think there are just some songs that are off limits. Like I know when we talked about that song One as well. Mm-hmm. You know, One means too much to too many people. And I wish I could do it justice. He gave me a really good reason. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Because we talked about it. It was like, that could work. Mm-hmm. And Streets Have No Name as well was one of those. I can't remember what the reason was, but it was just like the band felt like, no, you don't. And I said, that's fine. Here I go being, you know, the pushy director guy. That's fine. Totally fine. But can I just show it to you? Can I just at least show it to you? And the context. And then at least you've seen it and you can bat it away then. And I showed it to him. And I remember him sitting there and I'm very nervous when you show it to, you know, show anything to anybody. He goes, yeah, that works, doesn't it? was like, yeah, it does work. But, you know, when he goes, and it was like instantly, it was like, okay, well, I'll talk to the band and see what, you know, see what they say.
Yeah.
And it worked. I can't believe it. Oh, there's so many hoops on this film, not just with that in with the U2 songs, but just so many. As I'm standing here now, it's like, oh good gracious, I can't believe we're this side of all those hoops.
Was that a lot of them around music?
Yeah, music and just and that thing you talked about earlier as well, just energy, sustaining that energy with everybody. I didn't realize, I was quite naive, I have to admit, Edith, that I could, you know, sustain that for this long. And it was really, it's been the most rewarding process to see the film finished. And it's just amazing. I can't tell you what it's like to see it done. It's lovely. Mm. It's amazing. But getting there was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Wow.
You know, and one of those, you definitely have a few moments where you're like, I don't know if the film was working, but I don't know if I've got the steam in the engine left, you know. So, and then you have a big crisis of confidence. And then you're like, oh no, am I going to have to stop? And you just need, and then it's like, oh, maybe a break, Garth, maybe a little couple of weeks where you're not going, you know, would be a good
get
idea.
Get off that treadmill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The treadmill. Yeah.
Oh, well, we're so grateful you kind of, you know, persevered and got there, because it is so, we're so excited when, you know, when we heard there was going to be a second one, and dare I ask if there's going to be a third?
Well, I will be honest with you. We've talked about a third.
Yeah.
And the idea for it is so lovely and thrilling. I hope it gets made, but I can tell you for a fact, if it does get made, I wouldn't be writing or directing it. I would take a backseat role. I'd still do Miss Crawley if she was required, mm-hmm. but also as a kind of exec producer, if it happens. It would be great, because it is such a lovely premise and a direction to take it in. But who knows? I genuinely don't know what will happen.
I mean, we've run out of time, but we haven't even talked about Joby's brilliant work on this as well. You know, in terms of having kind of weave between all those, you know, kind of massive songs, you know, that we all kind
of. He has that unenviable task of having to weave all this stuff together. It's not
seamlessly
easy.
Though.
Yes.
Seamlessly.
Could you weave it all together? But do it seamlessly, please. I don't want to see any seams or hear any. No, amazing job that man did.
Yeah,
pulled the rabbit out of the hat on that one. Really did.
Well, maybe we can do an episode with the two of you at some point.
I'd love that. Have you ever spoken to him?
No, I'd love to.
Oh, you'd love him.
To.
He's a winner. He's
a
keeper.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, wicked. We like those. listen, it's so great to chat to you. And
you,
huge
Edith.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Go and have a holiday.
Yes.
And put your feet up.
All right, thank you.
And just, just enjoy the praise and the love that this film is.
That's very kind.
Getting.
Thanks, Edith. Lots of love.
All right, love. Cheers. Take care, darling. Nice to see you again. Bye,
Roxy. Bye now.
Bye. From the soundtrack to Sing 2, that's I Say a Little Prayer, performed by Tori Kelly and Pharrell Williams, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the brilliant Garth Jennings. Oh, my huge thanks to Garth for taking the time to talk to us. Sing 2 is on general release now and is a fabulous compliment to the original movie. Head to edithbowman.com to hear all of our previous episodes, including my first chat with Garth. And do subscribe whilst you're there and follow links to the dedicated Spotify playlist we put up for each show. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And do have a little look at our YouTube channel for some bonus interviews and videos. In fact, I put quite a few up last week. Jared Leto, Emma Stone, Steven Spielberg, and I'm just about to put up Hans Zimmer. Next up, I'll be joined on the podcast, and I'm thrilled to announce that I will be joined by Maggie Gyllenhaal and composer Dickon Hinchcliffe to discuss their work together on her fantastic directorial debut, The Lost Daughter. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.